This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen here with you. Well, there's no doubt that running a hospital is difficult and demanding, and it's only getting tougher. As competition and expenses increase, hospital administrators face great challenges in order to effectively lead during this time of transformational change in our healthcare system while remaining fiscally responsible. And always helpful is reflecting back on lessons learned from one's predecessors. Joining us to do just that are three individuals who, in their respective tenures as executive directors of Upstate University Hospital, have much to teach us. James Abbott served as hospital administrator from 1964 to 1971. Thomas Campbell served as CEO from 1973 to 1985. And James Rosenberg served in that post from 1986 to 1993. And they're joining me right now. Welcome to you all. Thanks so much for coming in, gentlemen. It's a pleasure to have you. So you all witnessed currently a great transformation in our healthcare system and dramatic advances in what medical science can now offer patients. I'd like you each to set the stage for what particular challenges each of you faced during your tenure. We'll start with you, Mr. Abbott. Tell us a little bit about what it was like at the very beginning of Upstate Medical University Hospital.
One of the elements was the fact that this hospital and its sister hospital in Brooklyn were the first two acute care general hospitals the state of New York had ever operated. And it seemed to me meant that we had to remember that, and particularly when we were talking with our partners in Albany and the central administration of the state university, that we had to be careful that we thoroughly explained what some of the functions were so that they could better understand the ways in which we had to operate to meet those functions.
And I understand at the time that you took over the reins, the medical school had been part of Syracuse University, and they handed it over to New York State at that point. And this hospital, the $22 million hospital, was first built, the first university hospital.
That was a sequence. The timing was a little different. My recollection is that the state took over the College of Medicine on or around 1950. And at that time, there were expectations on the part of a number of people that one of the early things that would be done would be the construction of this hospital. There were delays in that. And it wasn't until 1964 that the hospital was completed.
What made it unique, though? You were saying to be an acute care facility in this region, was it that there was it was meeting a great need that heretofore hadn't been met?
Well, I think I believe it would be a fair statement to say that the earlier University Hospital of the Good Shepherd had some functional and aesthetic limitations. And as time unfolded, there was, I think, growing evidence that the opportunity to put a best foot forward, both with respect to patient care and to teaching and to medical research, could be compromised in the near future. And that was a concern.
So they were really trying to meet all those needs, patient care, research, and education,
even
at the very inception.
That's right.
Mr. Campbell, when you took over the reins, I understand you worked with Mr. Abbott at one point early on. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about what you faced and what were the kind of the high points or the significant issues of your time.
Well, first of all, everything that Mr. Abbott said, I would have said it as well, because it was still going on when I came. The relationship between the medical center in Syracuse and the state government in Albany was always a little friction there, friendly friction, if you might say that, because they wanted to more understand what was going on in this place up here, because it was so different from everything else they handled. And that was continuing. We used to call it arm wrestling.
But I understand you also oversaw a number of things that took place
well,
during
that's
this time.
True. That during that period, there were a lot of breakthroughs in different types of medicine. And some of those breakthroughs ended up adding facilities to our hospital.
Give me an example.
Well, probably the biggest one that I recall was we had a pediatric chairman by the name of Dr. Frank Oskey, right? And he was a power of person, and he knew everything there was to know about pediatrics, and he was just a wonderful person. And at that point, we had the opportunity to build an intensive care unit for children,
and
which had not existed before. It was non-existent here.
And there were plans for a perinatal center as well.
Yes, right. Yeah. And a lot of that came as a result of some of the breakthroughs that were going on in pediatrics, that Frank was right there at the leading edge of a lot of that.
So in other words, in some ways, medical science drove changes within the physical plant and the services
definitely,
offered.
Definitely, definitely.
And you were able to respond to those.
Yeah.
And actual.
Well, that's a part of the arm wrestling that the state could understand. They could see these programs starting and said, you know, we really ought to be into that. So it was a little easier to sell some of those than it was other things.
How about you, Mr. Rosenberg? You had a little different time in history in terms of medical advances and challenges. What was it like for you?
Well, the evolution continued in terms of the advances in technology. The situation that I inherited and was an active participant in was satisfying almost an insatiable demand for capital. And we were blessed with the opportunity at the time with a new paradigm in the state system where they said, if you can generate sufficient revenue or surplus revenue, we'll allow you to keep it to invest in capital on your campus. And so that was a major shift in philosophy, and it took some getting used to on the campus, but everybody seemed to get the picture pretty quickly, and so we enjoyed a pretty robust capital infusion by those days, by the standards of that day.
And you instituted several new available services as a result.
We did a fair amount of refurbishing. A lot of imaging technology was brought on board. We were engaged in an arms race with some of the technical arms race with a number of the hospitals in the area. And to stay current, you needed to continue to invest in your program and infrastructure. We were blessed, though, contemporaneously, with a great faculty and an academic medical center, which really was the bedrock, and it continues to be the bedrock of this institution.
I also noted, in looking over your own history here, that you really started the comprehensive breast care program, which continues today. So,
I was part of that. I was perhaps able to coordinate and orchestrate, but certainly the beginning of that and its inception certainly goes to the faculty had the wisdom to initiate that.
Now, you were here from 86 to 93.
That would be correct.
So looking now at what you know about hospitals, what were some of the most significant changes in terms of things like length of stay today from then, or anything else that you think has
sure.
changed dramatically?
When people told me you could have hip surgery and go home the same day, which is what we are doing today, that was a far cry from the hip surgery of 1986. That was a major procedure. It was overnight, many nights potentially. We're doing that type of surgery on an outpatient basis in this day and age. And so the technology that has permitted healthcare to deliver outpatient program with great sophistication, minor, much more less invasive surgical interventions and greater accomplishments or comparable accomplishments, to me, is just stunning. When you think about it, there was a period of time where you were hospitalized for multiple days for cataract surgery.
And for pregnancy, giving birth.
Seven days.
It was routine.
For delivery. But yeah. Cataract surgery, you were in the hospital for 4, 5, 6 days, sandbags on your neck, and it was kind of crazy.
Oh, my goodness. Frightening.
And, you know, now you walk in and come out with a set of eye drops. And, again, that's just technology continues to advance. And I'm very optimistic that it'll continue to advance. And we are blessed to have that both in upstate New York and upstate, as well as across the country.
Across the country. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen, along with the past CEOs of Upstate University Hospital, Jim Abbott, Tom Campbell, and Jim Rosenberg. And we're talking about lessons learned during their respective tenures, perhaps that can be applied today. So getting to that whole notion, back to you, Mr. Abbott. Today, there seems to be a great pressure on certain challenges, like staffing challenges. Did you also experience issues in terms of getting adequate nursing staffing and adequate, you know, people, professors and physicians to work in your hospital?
Yes. Certainly nursing. My recollection is that to a lesser extent, but nonetheless a present one, were pharmacists. And some of the other allied health professionals, from time to time, there would be seemingly at least a greater or lesser difficulty in recruiting staff. That was, I think, first and foremost in my mind most of the time when I was working here.
How about things like, Mr. Campbell, did you have issues with regard to, there's so much competition today, even among hospitals, mm-hmm. for not only for staff, but things mm-hmm. like patient satisfaction, for patients, basically, for patients to choose one hospital over the other. Mm-hmm. Was there a lot of pressure? I know today we have things like the Press-Ganey scale, where patients literally rate their stay in a hospital. Mm-hmm. What was it like then, and is there something we could learn from what you learned back then? In terms of patient satisfaction?
The changes in patient satisfaction. It's always been a problem. And now that patients stay for a lesser time, it's even more difficult. So Press-Ganey is all over the place trying to get good information, but it's very difficult because, these patients come in and they mentioned eye surgery, It takes place now on a outpatient basis. So how can you get a good feel for satisfaction when these people are coming and going so quickly? It's very difficult.
And it also strikes me that they have less, in that sense, less, as you said, interaction with the staffing and with the
right.
whole environment.
Right.
And so maybe there isn't this time to develop a sense of allegiance or appreciation.
Right.
What do you think, Mr. Rosenberg?
I am delighted that it's come to the forefront, patient satisfaction. I think there was a period of time where perhaps we as an industry were not as conscious and conscientious of that. And I think the competition that we do have for patients has made us all better and has improved our presentation, our education, and I think, it's healthy. I don't think you can be a slave to the patient satisfaction surveys because I don't think they're infallible, but I do think it has made us a better industry by paying attention, certainly a more hospitable industry.
Now, you were speaking a few minutes ago, Mr. Rosenberg, about technology and about how the medical, the really dramatic advances and changes in technology have an impact currently today. Now, we today have electronic medical records, electronic communication systems with our patients, things that I'm sure you never dreamt of back then. How do you think this has had an impact, or is there something to be learned? Is it potentially that we've gotten away in some ways from some of the touch and feel of medicine as a result of some of these technological changes?
That would be hard for me to assess. I would think it has permitted You know, if you think about technology, and it will continue to evolve, and I don't want to be a say, well, we haven't accomplished anything yet. There's a lot more to come.
Yes.
But when you look at imaging, for example, and the fact that you can move images electronically around the country and around the world, have different interpretations and do it in nanoseconds, is pretty phenomenal from the days of a film library. And having to call down for films in the middle of the night and try and get them up to the bedside where a patient was. That being said, I don't, you know, what I would say is the technology, hopefully, and again, I'm not the care provider, but hopefully it gives the people that are at the bedside a little more ammunition to work with, a little more
access, quicker
knowledge, access, and they can spend more time on the integration of the technology with the intervention and therapies of the patient that the patient requires. So you would hope to think that while it will it compresses the stay, it gives you a little more time with your patient.
Just in a little bit of time we have left, I'm going to ask each of you, starting with you, Mr. Abbott, what advice would you give to today's current hospital administrators? I mean, I'm sure even in your own life you've been a patient and you've experienced, you know, the healthcare system. What advice would you give?
Well, it's nothing terribly profound, but I believe that there continues to be, at the fundamental level, a greater similarity than a difference in patient care. I can't speak to medical education and to research, but the care. The patient is still the same person. His or her concerns are the same. His psychological framework is, I believe, no different than it was in 1986 or in probably in 1906. And so I think if you bear that in mind, what that patient is thinking about when he or she is admitted, and do your level best, not just technologically, but in other ways, to make that individual feel more comfortable while he or she is there, to have less misgiving, and to leave with a sense that they have a future. I think that it was important then, it's important now, and I'm reasonably confident it's going to be important 15 years from now.
Well, very well said. How about you, Mr. Campbell? What advice would you offer the people who are running the hospital?
It's pretty hard to add to what Jim Abbott has already said.
There is an
area, and it has to do with the technologist. There's a lot of people who are seeing patients once, and they have to make a decision, and they have to communicate with that patient to bring the patient along with them. And that's very difficult to do on the time screen that we have available to us. And so I think in the educational side of this thing, there needs to be a lot more done about this. You can't talk about the leg that's in room 4 or the arm that's in room 6. You're talking about Mrs. Smith or Mr. Jones and that type of thing.
So the kind of the humanity of it all, just as Mr. Abbott said, needs to be preserved.
Right.
Even in a very highly technical and technological environment.
Well said.
Mm-hmm. How about you?
Adding to my colleagues' observations is very difficult. I would say that the only thing I might add would be to take the time to appreciate your staff and to celebrate their successes and, you know, be the coach you need to be, the colleague, the friend, and the leader. But always understand that they're all there trying to do the very best they can do. And they sometimes need that pat on the back as well. Their days are not always the simplest and easiest.
Very well said as well. And I think it's a complex system today, far more pressure on every piece of the system, patients and healthcare providers as well. Very well said. Thank you so much. My guests have been past CEOs of Upstate University Hospital, James Abbott, Thomas Campbell, and James Rosenberg. Thanks so much once again for sharing these these wonderful thoughts and perspectives with us all. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.